This is Rex. If you're listening to this, you are the resistance. Neocons in both parties are the virus. You are the cure. But to cure the disease, you must know what it is, how it works, what your capabilities are, and how to employ them with a human end in mind, effectively and efficiently. Labels in politics tend to be misnomers, and they tend to be misleading. Plus, there's a lot of overlap on some principles in the various factions. It is up to you to sort it out based on intent and action, not monikers. Is everything labeled neocon bad? No. But what is generally thought to be neoconservatism bears more resemblance to the left than to authentic American conservatism. Neocons infiltrated the Republican Party as the new left pushed the Democrats down the path of social chaos, only to find that it was far better for them to control both parties. Irving Kristol, believed to be the father of neoconservatism, once said, "Neocons are liberals who have been mugged by reality." A catchy summary that is mostly true, but not in the way neocons think it is. In our current vernacular, we use the word liberal derisively against the left, which results in the odd use of the word libertarian to describe lovers of liberty, and so as to avoid the derided, quote, conservative label, which has been appropriated by the big government Republicans. The reality is that liberals, libertarians, and even most conservatives are cut from the same cloth, modern liberalism, as opposed to traditional conservatism. The American experiment in self-governance is conservative to the core, in that it is the near fulfillment of the Western tradition of ordered liberty grounded in the natural law. The reason that conservatives and conservative libertarians have so much in common is due to the fact that modern liberalism is utopian in nature, decoupled from the natural law, and views the state as totalitarian. This makes Republicans and Democrats allies in that they both seek to drive the society from the centralized power of the total state, which engenders a reaction from Marxists and anarcho-libertarians or anarcho-capitalists for the abolishment of the state. The true conservatives see a need for an authority to create the conditions of order so that the rest of civil society can order our lives together organically. This is necessarily requiring a limited government and a society ordered toward virtue, protecting unalienable individual rights and fostering the common good, or as the founders called it, the general welfare. Our nation is out of balance, swinging between the absolutists and the anarchists, always on the tipping point of dissolution, leading to a fearful reactionary swing toward an ever-growing central government. Only the conservatives can restore balance. You are the resistance. Conservatives must resist the impulse toward absolute individualism, and even more so, absolute government. The purveyors of the ever-increasing welfare warfare state are neocons and corporatists in both parties of the national duopoly, which is the Democrats and the Republicans. This leads to a false electoral choice, you know, meaning that I can't stand Obama, so we're going to elect a Republican. Great, everybody elect Jeb Bush, everything will be fine. Or the anybody but Obama strategy we got last time round. Or Bush sucks, so we're going to vote for Hopi Changey. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. Because it's a false electoral choice designed to ameliorate you. It's designed to make you feel like you are participating. But what it actually does is involve you, and it provides them with implied consent for pseudo-empire abroad and a police state at home. The rise of the neocons occurred long, long ago. And to avoid a reprise of the neocons, we need to resist and counter their infectious virus harder and louder than 1980 and 1994, and to some extent, got to be louder than 2010. You are the resistance. You know, the you have a choice.
You know, I just think that it's just too real. Well, it's going to get real, because if we keep going the way we're going and they keep printing money the way they're printing it, and we get in another Cold War that we can't afford with Russia, because Putin ain't going to back down anymore. We've been kicking on Russia ever since the USSR collapsed, and now they finally got at a point economically, militarily, and a strong leader in there that's going, you're right on my damn border. I ain't going to take it no more. You know? The bullying thing only works for so long. You will either create new world powers, which we have with Russia and China, you know, new superpowers, or you will create enemies everywhere in the world like we have with the Middle East, and we're working on creating in Africa, to the point where it just engulfs you. God, it reminds me, what was that country, that ancient country? Oh, Rome, yeah. It reminds me of Rome. I'm being sarcastic, by the way. So, I don't know. Here we are. You know, tomorrow we'll see what new sanctions they put on. I know they sanctioned Putin's judo club. I'm sorry. That's freaking hilarious. They're like, I'm like watching the news going, why did they sanction Putin's judo club where he, you know. Oh, Lord. They're all nuts, man. Leave us the hell alone. Quit stealing my money.
Was that a country? Crimea River?
Crimea.
Yeah. Look, I mean, things are nuts.
No, that was
things
a long rant. I'm
nuts.
Sorry.
Yeah, things are nuts. Things are always nuts. Things have been nuts. Things will be nuts. I mean, look, you mentioned the collapse of the Soviet Union. Well, it collapsed, but guess what? Russia's still here. Ukraine is still here. Romania's still here. Poland's still here. You know, collapses are not necessarily extinction level events.
Doesn't go in a sinkhole.
It just means that the current political order collapses. And frankly, you know, if our political order collapses here as in the federal government, there's nothing to freak out about. If the federal government disappeared tomorrow, you'd be all right. You got a state government. You got a state legislature. You got courts. You got local police. You got sheriffs. You got fire departments. You got hospitals.
National Guard.
You'll be all right. You'll be all right. Now, granted, it would be better if you had a militia of the state as opposed to federalized National Guard. But you'll be all right. It's not that big a deal. But I don't really want the federal government to collapse because then, you know, we got to get the states to like get together again and draft a new Constitution or split up into, you know, several regions. It's just a mess. It is far better for us to just take over the federal government that our founding fathers gave us and put it back into the box it belongs in. But that's going to be tough to do if we keep letting corporatist Marxists on the left and corporatist neocons on the right run the show. And, you know, the thing that gets me is you say the word neocon and people's friggin' heads explode because it suddenly means you've indicted everything that's ever been labeled neocon. Well, you know, you and I were kind of in favor of Newt Gingrich in the last election. He's called a neocon a lot. And you want to know something? He calls himself a neocon. What he means by that, I don't know, because, you know, his foreign policy is slightly too hawkish for me. But a lot of the other things he did, whether he's a neocon or not, were actually regular conservative things. So it's not that black and white. But generally, neocon servitism, which is, I think, a poor name for essentially Trotskyites who are just upset at the kind of hippie chaos that the Democrats have become, the primary academic behind it was Leo Strauss, and he was pretty much a Marcusean relativist. So I don't know that these guys are actually conservative in any way, shape, or form, but like anybody else, sometimes there will be ideas that kind of overlap. The interesting thing about Newt, and of course, you know, a lot of our Ron Paul listeners are probably freaking out again. Hey, we love Ron Paul too, but I just think that Newt is a more effective politician, and I think he would have done things differently. But Newt also learns. And one of the things that he said, I think it was about last August, he wrote a piece in the Washington Times, which is posted in our on our show page, which is Liberty's Thunder on Facebook. It's also posted in Chris's group, which is Liberty's Talk on Facebook. And one of the things that he said was that, you know, I'm a neoconservative, but what have we been doing? And he said, you know, I think one of the quotes was, say the way that we were executed the wars may have, you know, been a failure. Republicans have a real obligation to ask themselves the question, aren't there some pretty painful lessons to learn for the last 10 or 12 years? Don't we have to confront the reality that this didn't work as a strategy? Well, you know, some people say Newt is just, you know, checking the wind to see where he should fall to keep himself relevant. I tend to think that Newt is pretty open to new ideas and is always learning. But either way you look at it, it is a self-examination that is occurring within the Republican Party, that maybe having these neocons run the show for so long hasn't been such a good idea. And don't think for a second that neocons are only a Republican phenomena. They certainly tend to have more cabinet posts when the Republicans are controlling the executive branch. But there were plenty of neocons in the Rhodes Scholar Clinton White House. And right now, the socialist meat puppet that they've got in there is pretty much running a neocon playbook. Maybe not neocon enough for someone like Jihad Jane McComed, but certainly neocon too much for Democrats, real conservatives, and libertarians. but it tends to be confusing. You know, who are these guys? What are they? Why are they here? The easiest way to spot neoconservatives is with their overly aggressive, imperialist, foreign adventurist foreign policy. It is not about having, like what Reagan did, which was peace through strength, being prepared to be stronger than any other enemy and being prepared to destroy any enemy quickly and decisively, but not going over into their backyards to actually do it. Oh, but Reagan was dealing with the Iranians and he was supporting the Contras and Nicaragua. Okay, well, that's a little bit different. First of all, when someone's playing in our backyard, and Nicaragua is pretty much in our backyard because we do share the Central American isthmus with them, and when those communists take over all over the Latin American countries, we got a problem. So that was legitimate. Oh, he invaded Grenada. Well, yeah, if you decide to hold some of our medical students hostage, I think we're going to come in there. We're going to get them. You know, it's going to happen. So having a strong foreign policy doesn't mean you will be out of conflict all the time, but you have to be prepared to go into a conflict at any time. But just because you can doesn't mean you should. But if everybody knows that you can, then your diplomatic statements carry more weight. You have diplomatic teeth, and you can actually handle a lot more things through negotiations. The one thing to keep in mind is Ronald Reagan ended the Cold War against the Soviet Union, and he won it without firing a shot against Russia. Here we are, 30 years later, and we are trying to start a war with Russia. One, it's dubious that we have the will to do after the last few neocon debacles. One, that we may not have the economic strength to defeat. And one that I don't think that we're necessarily going to be successful prosecuting because I don't know that we're on the right side. Does that mean that Putin's a nice guy and we should just let him do whatever he wants? No. But the reason Putin's acting the way he's acting is because of our neocon policy for the last two, three decades and a limp-wristed, weak-willed, speaking loudly and carrying a limp stick community organizer who you decided to make your civilian commander-in-chief. That's what you get. So that's how I see it. And do I think the neocons are rising? Actually, Chris, I mean, I like the title because it ties in with our whole Terminator theme and it's pretty cool, but the neocons are trying to rise, but I think that America has grown weary and wiser. And I don't know that they can rise this time unless we sit back and allow it. But I think a lot of people, especially you out there, Mr. and Mrs. Grassroots, don't want it to happen. And this is an issue that has proven to be transcendent of the conventional parties. With Syria, we saw Democrats, Republicans, conservatives, even some hawks and libertarians and independents all pretty much say, what in the hell are you thinking about bombing the crap out of a country that's engaged in a civil war in which we have nothing to do and basically becoming Al-Qaeda's Air Force? So it's a pretty powerful time to draw that contrast between a rational, conservative, peace-through-strength foreign policy as opposed to what they label as isolationist, and this chaos that the neocon foreign aggression has sowed. You got anything to add to that? You want to get into some neocon definitions there, Chris?
Well, one of the things I was going to say, and I didn't know, you knew more about Ron Paul than I did. I was not a follower of Ron Paul, but I started studying him as we got towards Tampa. And because I was curious and I wanted to know why he had such a huge, why he could pull 7,000 to 10,000 people in a college, you know, in an auditorium, and why he was never talked about. Yeah. And so I started doing research and I started looking at his foreign policy because that's what they beat him up on all the time. And this word isolationist, an isolationist says you're not involved anywhere. And I've never gotten, now I think Ron and Rand are a little bit different in terms of, you know, foreign policy, but still have this attitude that you don't want to run around the world causing problems, creating wars and having, you know, I mean, this concept of preemptive strike means that you basically create a doctrine that anytime any politician looks at a country and goes, they're not going the direction we want, oh my God, look at them. They're rebels. They have bad people in their government. Let's go blow them up. That's really what preemptive strike is. That is very similar politically to the idea of being able to arrest somebody and throw them in indefinite detention without being able to face a court of law. It's the same kind of thing. It is basically no rule of law, no constraint, depending on who's in power, you know, and being able to go, you know, you pissed off somebody in politics who has power in this administration or the next administration, doesn't matter, you know, D or R, doesn't matter. And they go, well, just label them as a terrorist and take them away. And they got nothing. They got no power. That's what your, you know, Patriot Act has evolved into with the NDAA. So it's very similar to what's happening to the citizens of this country, what we do or these particular neocons do in foreign policy. Well, we don't like the fact that they cut a deal with Russia, so let's go cause a revolution and topple their government so we can put our puppets in there. That's not spreading democracy. And I think that that's where my frustration in my rant was, is what do you believe in? What's important to you? Do you believe in this concept that is America, this shining city on a hill? And I found myself saying this a lot on the show and on my group that, you know, this ain't the Reagan era anymore, folks. A lot has changed. You know, it is a very different country and a whole bunch of different political stuff going on, a whole bunch of different political power players, and a whole different moral outlook on America's role in the world. Because being the example of the world and trading and being strong enough, if something goes bad and somebody invades somebody and that's your ally and you go kick ass and take names and then come home and tell them don't do it again or we'll come back and we'll kick your ass again, you know, and that kind of thing. I think most people generally agree with that. But what we're doing around the world is not that. And that's the frustration. And the part that when I was doing my research was nothing's changed. They haven't stopped. I remember when AFRICOM was put together, you know, as a war block, you know, all the military assets put around that so they could start moving into Africa because they were feeling threatened by China trading with people in Africa, not, you know, invading countries, but trading. And you're like, well, why don't we just go trade? You know, why don't we work together for the better of humanity? I mean, we've got, you know, it's a $100 trillion a year economy around the world. Why is it so many people are starving? You know, yeah, there's some bad governments out there. Well, good. Then spread democracy. You know, don't spread bombs. You know, and don't prop up, you know, some bloodthirsty, liver, heart-eating terrorist, you know, to topple a guy you don't like. That just, after a while, people quit trusting you as the superpower, and they start doubting your moral authority over the rest of the world, because that's really what happened when Russia fell, was the U.S. became the dominant superpower. And I love...
And we flubbed that up royally.
Oh, have we done it bad. But I love that Bush clip that has George Bush talking about, you know, we shouldn't be nation building, we shouldn't be invading countries, we have a lot of power, we should be very careful with it,
because
we don't want to look at it as a bully of the world. But the wording, you know what I mean? If you could just listen to that and go, well, I think most people would agree with that. The thing is, that's not what we do. And I think that's where the frustration, or you definitely hear from me, you know, the frustration. Every time I go research a country and I see something happen and I research it and I look at what we're doing in that country and I'm going, well, that ain't spreading democracy. What the hell do we call this? That's kind of like,
well, can you spread?
Well, that's kind of like empire building.
Not empire building. That's the problem. If it was empire building, we would go in there, we would take over, we would get the resources out, we'd bring them home and keep it, and it would either turn them into a vassal state or just devastate them and leave. But that's not what we're doing. We go over there, we risk everything we got, we go into debt for it, we kill our young men and women, disable them, and give them all sorts of
and then turn into
mental
a hellhole.
Problems. And it turns into a hellhole, and all the profits go to a few, you know, transnational corporations, and we get nothing. It's not really empire building. It's stupid. But further, the real question is, can you spread democracy through military aggression? And the other thing is, should you? I mean, let's be clear about something. For us to get to 1776, it took 1,500 years, even you could say 2,500 years of development of the ideas of democracy, rule of law, republicanism, small r republicanism, to get to the point where we had that. You can't go impose it on the people who aren't ready for it. And frankly, if democracy is about, at least the way we use the word, is about self-determination, then shouldn't the people over there be determined to do it themselves? Now, we can help them. And one of the best ways to help people is to give them an example. You be an example, you be wealthy, you be successful, you be trustworthy, you be honorable, you help when help is needed. I mean, and we do, by the way, despite all of our messes. When there's a tsunami in Southeast Asia, we show up to help. When someone else's airplane goes missing, and even though there's four American nationals on it, as far as I understand, we're the ones who go send our equipment to help because we have that capacity. But we only had that capacity because who we were, not who we're becoming. We're in a managed decline. And the only way to stop it is to get back in touch with who we are. And you lead people that way. And you trade with people that way. And that's how you spread the democracy. Not at the end of a gun. This Wilsonian idea hasn't worked for the 20th century, and it doesn't work now. But maybe we get ahead of ourselves a little bit, because the real issue here is, is everything neocon bad, and is it a label we could just ascribe to every problem that there is in the Republican Party? No. Some neocon policies have not been out of line with conservatism. Others have. The problem is when you have a clique inside the Republican Party that seeks to dominate the agenda, then it becomes indistinguishable from the other side. And that's the problem. And when you get real conservatives in there, they might have some overlap with some neocon policies. That doesn't make them neocons. You know, I hear it now. Ted Cruz is way too much of a neocon for me. I prefer Rand Paul. Well, what are you comparing it to? Because the battle is not between Ted Cruz and Rand Paul. You've got Ted Cruz, and you've got Rand Paul, and you've got Mike Lee, and you've got Justin Amash, you've got Trey Gowdy, and you've got Louis Gohmert. And they're doing their damnedest. But they're the minority of the minority. The idea is you don't start denigrating them because maybe they veered offline a little bit. You know, there are some areas of, especially when it comes to what's going to happen tomorrow, there are some areas of prudential judgment and disagreement where you can have the same principles and not necessarily the same policies. But the idea is that we need more people who think about these things, who think these things through, than to have a preconceived notion of what they want to do. I mean, remember something. The neocons tried to get us to invade Iraq when Clinton was president.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe they tried to get Bush to do it initially, and he balked.
Bush Sr.
Yeah, Bush Sr. and then Bush Jr. too, until after 9/11 with all the chaos and the, you know, rah-rah-rah, we got to do something. You know, so whenever there's a disaster, we got to do something. Well, we don't have to do anything. We have to do something, but not anything. And what do? Let's take advantage of this and push for an invasion of Iraq, which at the time, you could have fallen on either side of the equation. Maybe there were WMDs, maybe there weren't. The issue was not so much whether it was the wise thing to do or not, because sometimes you don't have all the facts. You get as many as you can, and then you have to make a decision. And that decision is, which mistake is greater? Going in, if in fact there is a threat, or not going in and finding out that there's a threat when I have some credible reason to believe that it's there, especially since, let's face it, Cheney and Rumsfeld sold Saddam weapons of mass destruction.
Yeah, I was going to say.
When he was fighting Iran in the 80s, so we kind of knew that they were there.
Especially when we sold the damn things to him.
Yeah.
God.
You know, but
and
if
gave him
insight
on where to attack people.
Right. So if you're going to go in there and do that, then go in and do it. It only took us 3 weeks to take Baghdad. Why were we there for so long? Because maybe the initial plan, the initial way it was sold, wasn't the plan that they had all along. And that's where we have to get some common sense, which is precisely why the Founding Fathers vested the war power in Congress, not in one
Congress.
Man.
Congress.
But they vested the power to execute the war in one man. Why? Well, if you've ever been on a committee of more than one person, it's damn near impossible to get anything done, which is great.
Have you ever lived in a family?
Yeah, it's great for a legislative process. It's a really shitty way to react to immediate threats. You cannot prosecute war by committee. Yeah, you're going to have joint chiefs, and you can have meetings and war games and all that kind of stuff, but ultimately it has to come down to one man makes that decision because you don't have time to fool around, which is why it is very important who you choose as the president of the United States, because not only is he the chief executive of the laws, he also happens to be the commander-in-chief, which is by necessity in this country made as a civilian position. We maintain civilian command of our military for the very reason that we don't want to end up like every other banana republic where the generals take over the government every time the government pisses them off, or the people manage to convey to the generals that, hey, look, we don't like these politicians and we don't want to wait for the next election, so take it over, which is why we haven't had an outright coup in this country in 2.25 centuries. Other than when the South tried to express its own sovereignty and Lincoln invaded. But we are seeing a silent coup. We're seeing a silent coup in the sense that these people are taking over both parties, taking over the federal government, expanding it so that it crowds out the private sector, the civil society, private business, churches, social organizations, communities, local governments, families, all that stuff is being crowded out. By schools, by federal control. And the only way you're going to stop that is to actually quit quibbling about, oh, I don't know if I like that Cruz, he's too Neil Con from here. Rand Paul is too much like his dad. He's kind of wishy-washy on foreign policy. Seriously, these guys have well-thought-out, well-reasoned plans. They differ slightly. So what do we do in the media? We decide, well, these guys are against each other because they're both vying for 2016. Maybe they just have prudential disagreements on how to prosecute a foreign policy. No one's going to get it perfect. Reagan didn't get it perfect. But he certainly ended up pushing his agenda despite the neocons surrounding him thanks to H.W. Bush, and we had a victory to a Cold War that nobody could see. Remember, this is coming after years of American military dominance over the Soviets, and yet we couldn't do anything. We were completely impotent in those first two decades of the Cold War. And then we went to this whole detente thing, which is just like basically telling the Soviets, hey, you know what, even though we're the dominant military power, we screwed this up so badly, we're just going to decide to be equal partners with you and to bite up the world. And the Soviets are like, oh, yeah? You flinched. We're going to invade Afghanistan. You know? And then here comes Reagan. He's like, yo, this detente thing doesn't work. So you know what my plan is? We win, they lose. And so he built up a massive defensive capability, which brought the Russians to the negotiating table. And he negotiated the end of the Cold War without having to fire a shot because they trusted him to do what he said he was going to do, and he had the balls and the economic power and the military power to back it up. Today, we don't have that. This is not the time to be fighting with Russia. Anyway, unless you got something you want to throw in there, you want to hear Ron Paul explain to us a little bit about who these neocons are?
I just had this flash of Jefferson. You know, Adams built the – We had the pirates taking our ships in the Mediterranean.
The Barbary pirates.
And the Barbary pirates. And we were spending 20-25% of our federal budget on bribes, which is just a weakness to their mindset because they're warrior-oriented. And Adams got appropriation to build the Navy and the Marines, but he didn't want to go to war because he was wishy-washy, and we had just got out of a 8-year war with England. Jefferson gets in and finds out we're paying 25% in bribes while they're still taking our ships, and said, screw that, and he went and took care of business. And that's, it just kind of flashed in my mind when you're talking about Reagan, you know.
Yeah.
Some people don't appreciate weakness, you know. Weakness is not a foreign policy. But on the other side, on the other side of that pendulum swing, neither is invading every freaking sovereign nation in the world and forcing your will down their throat. That's not a foreign policy either. And that's what we've been up against for the last, I don't know, since the USSR fell. You know, we just seem to be, we've got this power structure inside of, well, yeah. But, I mean, really, you know, if you look at the scope of what we're dealing with right now, and and they have a lot of power. You know, all I've heard in the news, even though I don't watch the news, amazing how much of it I hear. Isn't that funny how that works? But they're bitching and moaning and whining about, you know, oh, Bob is cutting our military, and I'm like going, no, he's not. We spend $450 billion frickin' dollars on it every year. We got a $1 trillion plane that can't get in the air, and we just got rid of the 2%. What was that called? The Republicans voted that out, that put the funding right back up where it was. I mean, we spend billions, $100 billion a year more than we ever have in the military, and they're whining that we ain't spending enough. And in some ways, if you could speculate that that's the reason they want to restart the Cold War with Russia, so they can get it bumped up another $100 billion a year, and all these defense contractors can make a fortune because we're out of Iraq and we're pulling out of Afghanistan, and that's their gravy. War is their whole industry, not defense. Because if you want to talk about national defense and you want to match Russia or China, all you need is about $250 million a year to match. So what's the other $200 billion a year? To aggress, you know, to be aggressive.
And build Skynet. To build Skynet.
Yeah, and build Skynet and build $1 trillion planes that we can't get in the air, and build, you know, $50 billion rockets that don't fire right, and waste money in these defense contractors. We left hundreds of billions of dollars of equipment behind in Iraq and Afghanistan. And we've also
found that. But we paid for it with
that. Yeah, we printed it. Oh, my God. It's insane. It's a whole economy. That's the problem. People don't realize
it's the military-industrial complex.
Huge. It's a huge influence in our federal government. People don't get it.
The most hawkish senators and congressmen are always the ones who get the biggest campaign contributions from the so-called defense contractors. Let's be clear about something.
And guess where they go to work when they retire?
Yeah, the defense
companies. Yeah.
Look, the thing is that you need to have the latest technology, the most well-built, powerful, ready equipment, the best-trained military at all times, which means you constantly have to be getting ahead of everybody else. You constantly have to be innovating. But what innovates better, the guaranteed government contract secured program or the competitive marketplace?
Yeah.
And, of course, when I say competitive marketplace, I'm not talking about, quote, a free market in military stuff, because that's insanity. Because then, you know, if you want to make a profit, you say, hey, you know what, I'll sell it to the federal government. Then I'm going to sell it to the Chinese, I'll sell it to the Russians, and I'll make a lot of money. There has to be some national interest control over this development, this research, the proliferation of these weapons, and we should always have the best and the latest. But you don't get that with guaranteed contracts because there's no incentive to innovate. You end up building these very expensive things that don't work, and then what do they do when they don't work? Well, you can't fit a man in this airplane. Well, maybe we'll run it as a drone. Fantastic. More Skynet hunter-killer drones. That's the insanity. That's what happens. Here's about 6 minutes, Ron Paul talking about
neoconservatism.
Now, this is principles are what count. You elect people to go in with principles because what's going to happen when they get there, you have no idea, and neither do they. So things are going to change because the circumstances change, but the principles don't change. How they're applied does. And when you hear someone like Rand Paul and someone like Ted Cruz with their well-thought-out foreign policy positions, and then you hear chaotic insanity coming out of the mouths of people like Jihad Jane McComet and mealy-mouthed wussiness projecting weakness from people like Barack, community organizer Obama, that's exactly what we do not want. And the only way you're going to get the rational adults to go in there and prosecute this properly is if you create a grassroots tsunami to get these people elected to defend the positions of the ones that are under attack, like Justin Amash, and to further the ones that can have a chance at dislodging the rhinos, like Matt Bevin and Joe Miller and whoever, I can't remember the names, challenging Lindsey Graham and all that kind of stuff. That's what you have to do, and you can give them money. Don't give it to the party. You give it to the candidate directly. You can make phone calls. Most importantly, get other people aware, because if we can get a 2 or 3% turnout increase for the real conservatives this November, it would make 2010 look like a little girl's tea party. Want to go to final thoughts? I think we're out of time to play clips. We're done.
Yeah, no problem. I was just thinking, you know, as you were talking, I was thinking about the Reagan Revolution. You know, and a lot of people think, you know, we look back at Reagan and his influence on the country, but we don't look at his rise to power, because his rise to power was just as much battle, war, nitpicking his policies. In that opening clip, you had a little bit of Ford in there being slick with his words about, oh, yeah, well, if he got to power, he would have a different, you know, opinion, you know, his foreign policy, blah, blah, blah. You know what I'm saying? Just that stuff to show weakness or ineptitude or lack of, you know, adult understanding of how dangerous the world is. You know, I think anybody alive today, especially in the world of the internet, knows how freaking dangerous the world is. You don't hear from Fox until they want to amp you up, you know, for another war. But if you get on the internet, you can look all over the world and go, holy crap, man, there's a lot of crap going on out there. It's really dangerous. And so I don't think we have the naive culture that we had in the past, you know, that only got their news through three alphabet soup networks. But Reagan was attacked. He was criticized. He was insulted. He was talked down to. It was a constant barrage against him. He won all but one state because he had a message and he had a mass roots tsunami. Literally, it was just incredible. People were sick of the status quo. You know, from Nixon and his debacles, and the Republican Party going down to 18%, and Carter, and you know, running Ford. You know, it was just a mess, and people were sick of it. And Reagan, you know, he just slipped right in there and just had a solid message. He had an American message. He had a peaceful message, and he was inundated with personal freedom, economic responsibility, you know, which is what you hear from, you know, Cruz and Rand and Lee and the rest of them, is the damn Constitution, the rule of law, personal freedom, you know, what this country stands for, the core principles of the country. That was his message, was not that complex. And he came in a terrible time in history and wiped it out, you know, won just a landslide win, and then turned around and won again, and went away, and he changed our country very quickly. And like you said earlier, you know, I don't agree with everything he did, but he also had a contentious Congress that he had to fight and battle with and deal with. And so that's where that compromise issue gets in there. You know, you're still trying to get stuff done. You're still trying to govern. And sometimes you don't get the best deal, you know, on the table. But for the most part, turned our country, you know, within a year or two. In fact, really, if you think about it, the important thing was attitude. You know, the moral attitude of the country under Ronald Reagan was, we can't, you know, that thing that Obama won on, that hope and change, which was just felonious socialist crap. But, you know, Reagan won on America's great, we are a great people. You know, we're a moral people. You know, we're the light of the world. We're the city, shining city on the hill, and we deserve to be great. That was the message, and it was powerful. And like I said, if you go back and you do the study and the research, you'll find out they kicked the crap out of him on a daily basis. They did not want him in power. They didn't want him to be heard. Every time he spoke anywhere, immediately the neocons and the rhinos and the Democrats would get on the news behind him. You know how Fox will have an interview and then they'll bring up their panel and tear that person apart after they've left and can't rebuttal it. They did the same thing to Reagan. We have the exact same battle going on today as we did then. The power structure of the night circle of hell where you live and doesn't want to lose power to these constitutionalists, because the Constitution says all these organizations and departments and, you know, whether it's the war machine or the Department of, you know, Ecology or whatever, all these entities, these non-constitutional government or non-constitutional government entities aren't supposed to have the power they have. So they're always going to be threatened by a Rand or a Cruz or a Lee or a Reagan. And that's the important thing. So don't think it's tough now, you know. Oh, my God, they're beating up on Rand. Well, you ain't seen nothing yet. If the guy runs, it's going to get ugly. Look at the last primary. It was ugly. You'd think that the Democrat Party was running against the conservatives, you know, by the crap that came out of the Romney camp and the RNC, because they had their guy picked. They had their status moderate, and he ain't a moderate. He's a progressive liberal. But their moderate status, and it was his turn, just like it's going to be Jeb Bush's turn. And that's important to understand that. So that means they have to destroy these guys who are fighting for you. That's really what it's about. And it is no different. We've faced it many times in this country. In fact, you go all the way back to the beginning and the founding of the country, you will see the exact same battle between the Federalists and the Anti-Federalists. It's, you know, Hamilton and those guys, it was the exact same battle. These massive central government, all the power in the elites, the central bankers, you know, the whole thing, that group wanted to shape America one way, and then the Anti-Federalists wanted state power, individual sovereignty, limited centralized government, you know, free markets, trade, peace, you know, all that stuff. And it's the exact same battle. You know, it's all right there. We got 250 years of history. And you think it's tough, then you haven't studied history, because it's been bad before. It's been bad since the beginning. This is a never-ending battle. And you got to fight it. You got to win it. And this is the greatest country that ever existed in the history of the world. And things suck right now really bad. IRS, NSA. Perpetual wars, preemptive strikes, drone killing villagers at weddings. It's terrible what's going on in our country, and I despise it because it doesn't represent me, but it's my country, so it's a terrible feeling in my heart, but it's not the America I know, and it's not the America we can be, and it's time to change it. 2014 is important. 2014 will set the stage to 2016, so I'm not worried about 2016 until it comes. But 2014 is very important. Back to you. Rex?
I'm sorry, I threw up a little bit when you said Jeb Bush. I had to clear my throat. what you said is very true. I think some of us forget, well, maybe we weren't even alive, you're not even old enough to know what happened back then. As I've quoted a couple of times on the show recently, and it's in our on our Facebook page, Liberty's Thunder. It's also posted in Chris's group, Liberty's Talk. I cracked open The Age of Reagan, The Conservative Counter-Revolution, 1980 to 1989, by Stephen F. Hayward. And I'm going to read from the first two pages of Chapter 3, which starts off with a quote from Margaret Thatcher. "We were not to know it at the time, but 1981 was the last year of the West's retreat before the axis of convenience between the Soviet Union and the Third World. There is new leadership in America, which gives confidence and hope to all in the free world." And then he goes on to talk about just after Reagan was inaugurated, and he goes, "Leading media hatchet man Sam Donaldson asked Reagan what he thought the Soviet Union's long-range intentions were. 'Do you think, for instance,' Donaldson asked, gilding his question, 'the Kremlin is bent on world domination that might lead to continuation of the Cold War? Or do you think that under the circumstances, détente is possible?' In the course of pursuing the presidency, Reagan had moderated several of his saucier positions on domestic issues such as Social Security and the Civil Rights Act of 1964. Donaldson's question was designed to see whether Reagan would now trim his hardline rhetoric about the Soviet Union, and Donaldson's use of the phrase world domination was a specific reference to what liberals long thought a laughable and unserious tick of conservative anti-communist rhetoric. More broadly, what was on the minds of the foreign policy elite was whether Reagan, like Richard Nixon before him, would embrace at least a modified detente once in office. Reagan's answer stunned the room. This is Reagan. Well, so far, detente has been a one-way street that the Soviet Union has used to pursue its own aims. I know of no leader of the Soviet Union since the revolution, and including the present leadership, that has not more than once repeated in the various communist congresses they hold their determination that their goal must be the promotion of world revolution and a one-world socialist or communist state. Now, as long as they do that, and as long as they, at the same time, have openly and publicly declared that the only morality they recognize is what will further their cause, meaning they reserve unto themselves the right to commit any crime, to lie, to cheat, in order to attain that, that is moral, not immoral, and we operate on a different set of standards. I think when you do business with them, even at a detente, you keep that in mind. That was it. Next question. There was an audible gasp among the press corps in the briefing room. Some of Reagan's own aides, cowering in the corners of the room, blanched. This was not the way world leaders talked about other nations. This was the most blunt presidential language since Harry Truman dressed down Soviet Foreign Minister Vladimir Molotov. Now, the crazy thing is that Putin could get up and give that speech today about our neocon foreign policy. But at the time, the Washington establishment hated Reagan. When he said stuff like that, they just freaked out.
This can't be happening, man. This isn't happening.
So it's we've been here before. And someone like Rand, someone like Ted, is going to get a lot of flack for the fiery positions they've taken. But they're just talking about constitutional principles, right principles, and applying them to the practical situation today. One of the criticisms both of them are going to get, which interestingly enough the press laid off with a certain senator from Chicago, is that, well, they can talk all this, but governing is a different story altogether. Well, that is true to an extent, but they said the same things about Reagan. They called him a buffoon. They said he wouldn't be able to do it. You heard Ford in the opening clip there kind of belittling him, but then he got there. And he proved them all wrong. But he also upset some conservatives because he worked with the establishment. He put them in his cabinet. He made George H.W. Bush his vice president, which was something he had to do in order to get the party behind him. But Reagan knew how to put the right people in the right places and the convenient people in the convenient places, and then he knew how to manage them. And yes, there were setbacks. It doesn't always work. Look, governing is messy. Liberty is messy. Things are not always going to go right. It's not going to be hunky-dory, roses, and sunshine. But you need to get the right people with the right principles in place to affect the right policies that are necessary at that time within the bounds of the Constitution and our conservative tradition. That's not going to happen on a whim. That's not going to happen merely because you listened to this show and posted some articles on Facebook. It's only going to happen if you grow the base of America's liberty lovers, constitutionalists, conservatives, conservative libertarians, and independents who aren't even involved. And the way that you do that is you reach out to them personally. You know, today's gospel reading at Mass was about Jesus talking to the Samaritan woman at the well. Now, men and women at that time didn't talk to each other in public alone, and certainly not a Jewish rabbi talking to a Samaritan woman. But that's the kind of radicalism that Jesus injected. He reached out to everybody. And you have to do the same thing. You have to take that kind of zeal, and you've got to reach out to those people who haven't heard the message of liberty, who haven't heard what real conservatism is. Most people have a preconceived notion. They usually identify with Republicans and these days with neocons. You mentioned the word, they shut down. Explain the positions to them. Explain the Constitution. Explain why someone like Rand Paul, someone like Ted Cruz, irrespective of what happens in 2016, they're up there working right now. They need you to send them help this year. Forget 2016. They need help in the Senate, and they need help in the House. Justin Amash needs help in the House. Trey Gowdy needs help in the House. Louie Gohmert needs help in the House. The only way that's going to happen is to get the message out to other people. So make sure every day you do something to advance the conservative cause for liberty. Because the neocon agenda is on its heels, and they're pressing harder. And their current meat puppet in the White House is pushing their agenda more than George W. Bush did. But it's a failing policy, and people can see that. You just have to show them that there are other alternatives and other answers. And whether it's Jebby Bush or Hillary Clinton in 2016, nothing will change. It's only going to change if you change it now, and you change it this November, and November starts right now. Get busy, because when times like this happen and the 70s sucked, the 80s could be right around the corner. It won't be the same. It's always going to be different. But we can have mourning in America again. We can be relevant on the world stage as a fair partner and an example instead of derided because we're blowing people up all over the place. We can control our debt principally by outgrowing it and getting a stable monetary system. We can cut taxes and promote free enterprise. Things that you can't even imagine being invented are going to be invented if you unleash the creativity, and that includes our military capability. But it isn't going to happen unless you make it happen. And you can't do it alone, and I can't do it alone. But if every day you reach out to somebody who hasn't heard the message and you convince them to get active, and don't try to convince a committed liberal progressive or a diehard Democrat. 114 million people didn't even vote in the last presidential election. Reach out to those people. Share this show with them. Show them places on the Internet where they can get their own research and cross-reference it. But just get them active, because if we don't stop it now, and we don't roll it back to the constitutional bounds and look to a brighter future tomorrow, it'll be exactly what Newt Gingrich said about Mitt Romney winning the election if we nominated him and he won. It'll be managing the decay. Don't manage the decay. Look to the future. Make it morning in America again. We'll be back for Open Lines Thursday, 9 p.m. This is Rex and Trog signing off. And the thunder of liberty rumbles on. As the federal government engages in yet another police state action to illegitimately seize land to which it has no constitutional claim, the world is reacting to its unnecessary foreign interventions and monetary manipulations. Liberty at home is threatened by a failing monetary scheme backed by the military might of a pseudo-empire. An overextended paternalistic welfare state resorts to draconian police state tyranny directed against those who eschew its diabolical grip, while purchasing the loyalty of some citizens over those who resist. The welfare warfare state is necessarily tyrannical towards those who threaten the expansion of the administrative bureaucracy, while lulling the cooperators into a soft despotism. Liberty is crushed violently in those who resist and willingly in those who comply. The Democrats seek to incorporate all into the administrative state, either as ruling oligarchs, complicit agents, or servile subjects. And the Republicans seek to do the same thing, albeit more efficiently. This engenders a reflexive reaction from libertarians, which unfortunately tends towards anarchy. Authentic American conservatism seeks a balance between totalitarian tyranny and anarchic dissolution, resulting in atomization of the individual, the degradation of society, and the death of liberty. This threatens the left and the right, the Democrats and the Republicans, as well as the libertine hedonists and statist dullards. Shall we have ruin, revolt, or reform? For liberty to thrive, we need civil society to empower mediating institutions and local communities, curtail the expansive administrative state to its enumerated powers, and promote the rights to individual liberty balanced by civic duty. Conservatives are assailed by totalitarian statists on the left and anti-statists on the right, both of which will destroy liberty. While conservatives and libertarians have many differences within themselves and within each other, we have far more in common. Yet there are many within our ranks who sow discord and disunity to empower the enemies of true liberty. While will we be dragged down the road to serfdom, willingly embracing our own demise, or stand in the breach and restore ordered liberty in a free and virtuous society? At core, this is an anthropological issue. Who is man? What is his end? How should we conduct ourselves? This exceptional confederated republic was founded on great principles of classical liberalism, but unfortunately it carried a strain of radical liberalism as well. This inevitable drift towards soft despotism was sowed from the start. Adam said the Constitution is for a moral and religious people, which meant, in C.S. Lewis's words, mere Christianity and or the natural law. The freedom afforded by the Constitution demands cultural restraint based on timeless moral principles, Christian in nature, although one need not necessarily be a Christian to accept its moral philosophy. Without the moral grounding of our culture, the Constitution of 1789 drifts towards the French spirit of that same year, albeit more slowly and less convulsively. Many libertarians get this. The vocal ones don't. Libertarianism, with a small L, not the Libertarian Party, that's the word we use for classical liberalism, which is an odd word, and it was made necessary because FDR appropriated the word liberal to obfuscate the fascistic progressive agenda, so-called. For that matter, Republican progressives have appropriated the word conservative. Nevertheless, there is an authentic American conservatism, whether it's paleocon, constitutional con, liberty con, Christian con, or whatever. Its principles are clear, but it isn't a rigid ideology. Rather, it is a set of principles by which conservatives view themselves and the world, and it has a profound political context and a rich intellectual history with significant practical applications. Liberalism, properly understood, is greatly desired in government, but it is very dangerous in society and culture. This maximal freedom will lead to atomized individualism concomitant with totalitarian collectivism, in which the state is everything and everything is the state. These are two violent extremes which both lead to dissolution and loss of liberty. The proper balance is maximal freedom through a limited government and optimal order through a morally restrained culture. The former is only possible with a confederation of united and sovereign free states and semi-autonomous municipalities. We use federalism to express that. The latter is only possible through interdependent communities comprised of self-restrained individuals. Are we Americans or are we neo-Frenchy radical Jacobins? Choose wisely. Speaking of French, in the second volume of Democracy in America, Alexis de Tocqueville said, "Over these citizens is elevated an immense tutelary power which takes sole charge of assuring their enjoyment and of watching over their fate. It is absolute, attentive to detail, regular, provident, and gentle. It works willingly for their happiness, but it wishes to be the only agent and the sole arbiter of their happiness. It provides for their security, foresees and supplies their needs, guides them in their principal affairs, directs their testaments, divides their inheritances. In this fashion, every day, it renders the employment of free will less useful and more rare. It confines the action of the will within a smaller sphere, and bit by bit, it steals from each citizen the use of that which is his own. Equality has prepared men for all these things. It has disposed them to put up with them, and often even to regard them as a benefit."
And so
you have a choice.
We're in a mess. And the part that rings in my mind so much about this was when the USSR fell back in 91, they said that one of the greatest, and actually it happened when the, you know, tear down this wall, Reagan era with East Germany, because they were just a total socialist state. The government owned and controlled all acts of trade, business, whatever. And so people were just work units. You know, they made no decisions in their lives except fear. They had that decision to make. But when the USSR fell and other countries who've been under totalitarian type rule, the biggest fear was how many generations would it take before those people were productive in a free enterprise society. That's a big one, Rex, because we have done to America, to a big chunk of this society, what we feared was going to be the cause and effect of spilling out of communism, you know, with 180 million people in Russia and other, you know, Soviet satellite states. So it was actually more than that, because I think they were over 400 million people in their whole empire. So we got a problem. And here's the challenge. Nobody is talking about it. Now, we do, and a handful of people that we follow or study or whatever or refer to talk about it. But as far as U.S. politicians go, they avoid it like the plague. So, you know, because Republicans are afraid to talk about, well, there's two reasons. Republicans don't want to talk about it because they're not interested in fixing it, because it's that welfare, warfare state, you know, and that world order mindset, you know, keeping people down. And Democrats don't want to talk about it because it's their programs. You know, they put them in place and they, you know, and keep jacking them up and pushing them as far as they can. So we have a whole corrupt system that is beyond just the federal government. It's in our states, it's in your county, it's in your city, and nobody knows what to do, and everybody's fighting to keep it because those are voters. And that's the sad part, because, I mean, we could use a spiritual revival in this country. But again, if everybody wanted to get up and all of a sudden, you know, they all got struck by God and said, I want to go to work and be a productive citizen, there ain't no damn jobs. So now you have another problem. We have a stalled economy. Now, if you listen to some economists, they say we've been in a depression. This is no recession. There is no recovery. It is a depression, and the only reason you don't see it or feel it is you don't see people standing in food lines at the soup kitchen because they all get an EBT card. And that's something that my son had brought up, you know, back in whatever conversation on one of the shows. So here we are in this insane mess, and it seems like it doesn't matter what we do, that, you know, they want to get us in more wars and more wars. And I just was reading an article that the new head of NATO wants $990 billion to build up the military. And I'm like going, who in the hell has got $990 billion? You know, I mean, are we just going to print more and throw it on top of it? It's like we're racing as fast as we can for the biggest cliff that we can find. That's just about how insane it is right now. And honestly, I can't think of a half a dozen guys in Congress that even talk about it or willing to address it or hint that it's a problem. And everybody else is just acting like we're not even going to touch this with the 10-foot pole. And that's sad, because it's not going to self-correct. It wasn't going to self-correct in the 80s. It took Reagan fighting with a bunch of neocon, you know, rhino liberal group back then just to get a few things done. And it took Newt in the 90s, you know, a battle of all battles just to get 8, 9, 10 items done. And so here we are, you know, 15, 20 years later, and it's just accelerated. So it's not going to go away. And I don't know what it's going to take to wake people up. I mean, it's like, you know, you and I went through the whole primary, you know, day by day, you know, radio shows, blogging, whatever. And then you kind of, okay, Romney lost. That's what he wanted to do anyway. And so now we got to start gearing up for 2012. But now that, I mean, 2014, but now that 2014 is here, I'm hearing the same crap come out of everybody's mouth. I feel like I'm right back in 2012. And maybe that was the Freudian slip. I said 2012. I just don't see it. I don't hear it. All I hear is rhinos and neocons trying to start a war with Russia, rhinos acting like there isn't a problem and they'll fix it if we give them the Senate, which you know they won't. You know, then they'll tell us we need the presidency, and then the president will get in there, and then if you have a House and Senate with Republicans running it, then they can go back to the Bush era and, you know, continue with the rhino plan, which is two notches below the Democrat plan in terms of expenses and avoidance across the land. So, you know, we need a liberty movement, and we needed one a long time ago, but they won't allow it to happen. And we know that if Rand Paul is looking like he's going to win the primary, Sheldon, you know, the great gambler, is going to spend $100 million to defeat him. I mean, you know, when you hear stuff like that, you're going like, is it going to have to fall? I mean, is that what's going to have to happen? Is it going to have to crash before people finally wake up and realize that you've got to quit voting these frickin' lying, slimy sacks of crap into office and purge that system and get some fresh blood in there and give those guys, the Rand, the Cruz, the Lee, the, you know, the Gohmert, the, you know, the rest of them, some support so we can possibly turn this ship around before it crashes? Because most of the stuff I study says we got maybe a year, two if we're lucky. And so I don't know if they're going to do anything about it, Rex. I don't. I really don't. We talk about this stuff all the time. You know, and I hope so, because I don't know. I'd hate to move out of the country. But, you know, if idiots are going to destroy my country, I don't know. I'm not sure. I'm looking at places. South Island, New Zealand, I don't know, man, someplace.
They have strict immigration rules. Good luck getting in there.
Yeah, you just got to have money.
Maybe. is it going to crash? Maybe. Is it not going to crash? I don't know. Do people need to wake up? Yes. Are they going to wake up on their own? No. No, they're not. That's the whole thing. People don't just suddenly wake up and go, oh, you know what? I'm going to get my head out of my ass and realize that the politicians have been screwing me and turning me into a worker drone and ripping me off invisibly with inflation and taxing the crap out of me, and, you know, I'm going to do something about it today. It doesn't work that way. Okay? You need to inform them. And the thing is, and like I was talking about in the opening, a lot of people like to be taken care of by the government. As long as the government sends them their food and gives them a modest job or some kind of benefit, like, you know, a check that comes in periodically, and you know, you've got your freedom of choice. You can, you know, pick from 42 different cereals, and you got 200 and some, 300 and some, you know, channels on television to choose from, and, you know, you can play around on the internet in your Candy Crush saga and look at Kim Kardashian's ass or whatever it is that you're into, and, you know, hey, you know, I'm happy. That's cool, and they, you know, they leave me alone for the most part, and I can read stuff and do stuff, and it's great. But that's not life, okay? We all lived with our parents. We grew up with our parents. Our parents took care of us, and their whole job, if they did it right, or even if they tried to do it right, was to turn us into adults so that we would go out in the world and do something with our lives independent of them. That doesn't mean you hate your parents so you leave them behind, or if they need help, you don't go back and take care of them, but it means that their job was to turn you into an adult, a self-sufficient, functioning human being that can work interdependently with other human beings. You know, that's the whole kind of notion of the division of labor that Adam Smith was talking about, even though there are some serious flaws in his system. But the fact is that we specialize and we do things and we figure out what our talent is that can best contribute to what others need, and that's how we sell our services or invent a new product, and we get paid and we contribute and everybody shares and everybody specializes and things get better. That's kind of how it works. But if everybody just wants to sit back and be taken care of like an adult adolescent, then who's going to carry the weight? Who's going to do the heavy lifting? Who's going to create the jobs? Who's going to invent the next thing? Who's going to provide the food that more and more people need? Who's going to take care of medicine? You see, that then the government comes in because of the vacuum that you've created, and it comes in and says, well, we'll take care of it. Well, governments are only good at a couple of things. Generally, those things involve violence. Things like arresting you for committing a crime, trying you in court when you're guilty, incarcerating you. Or if someone's trying to come in and do something bad in our country, blow up a building or kill somebody, we're pretty good at killing them or, you know, repelling invasions. So usually it involves violence. Now, when you start asking the government to do beneficial things like feed you, and wipe your ass, and blow your nose, it's going to do it violently. And that's what we saw here. In that opening clip, you heard from Judge Andrew Napolitano talking about the Bundy Ranch. Of course, that's everybody's big thing right now. We go, oh, there's militia showing up. Let me be clear about something. There is no militia showing up. There's no militia. Since 1903, we've been systematically for 30 years disbanding the constitutional militia, and now we don't have one. People say, oh, the National Guard is a militia. No, the National Guard is pretty much just an adjunct of the U.S. Army. We don't have militia. Those are private gangs. They might be well-intentioned, but that's not statutory militia. And is Bundy right or wrong? I'm not entirely sure. It does appear that those are probably federal lands, although the Constitution pretty much does not allow the federal government to purchase land outside of the 10-mile square district that I happen to live in, the Imperial City, for any purpose other than forts, munitions depots, Navy yards, and other needful buildings. So I don't know if that's legitimate. The Nevada Constitution does pretty much give up control of 88% of the land of Nevada, you know, forever to the federal government, which is dubious at best. I'm sure that someone was twisting some arms there to get them, you know, admitted into the union. Who knows? I don't know the whole story, but that's really not the point, whether the land is federal or Clark County, or whether Bundy's right in not paying the fees, or whether he's wrong. The real question you have to ask yourself is, why is there a government agency that's armed to the friggin' teeth with helicopters and drones and snipers and all this stuff, right? Why is there a government agency that's going to go hassle this guy because he allegedly owes $300,000 in fees he hasn't paid since 1993, so we're going to make a big deal out of it today, and then we're going to spend $3 million rounding up his cattle, which is effectively theft, whether they're grazing on federal land or not. You're stealing his cattle. And to collect a $300,000, even if it's a $1 million fine, how does it make sense to spend $3 million to collect $1 million? Just something he said, well, we have to make sure that he obeys the law because otherwise everybody will disobey the law. Have we spent this much money and resources protecting the southern border? I mean, if everybody's got their panties in a bunch over the fact that Bundy's breaking the law, which he may or may not be. I mean, that's kind of between the sheriff, Clark County, Nevada, and maybe tertiarily involves the feds, but, you know, that could be worked out. But we're spending all this money because he broke the law. What about all the people that break the law by just walking across the border illegally into our country? Oh, there's no such thing as an illegal human being, Rex. I didn't say the human beings themselves were illegal, but they're trespassing in our country. They're coming in, and they bring with them criminals, sex trafficking, drugs. And I'm talking about, let's just assume that most of the people crossing the southern border are really just coming here to work, to really, you know, get a job and make something of their lives. That's fine, but they bring with them, and they're usually trafficked by criminals, drug dealers, the child traffickers, who knows how many friggin', you know, terrorists from, you know, various jihadi networks in the Middle East are taking advantage of this. So is that really the right use of our federal resources to spend this amount of money beating up on one dude and his cattle, ostensibly for the sake of a friggin' turtle, when we got all these other problems? You see, this is what happens when you let lawlessness happen. Now, we're accusing Bundy, this guy whose family's been here since the 1800s. He says since like the 1880s. Well, I think Nevada was admitted to the Union in 1864, so some of his claims are dubious. But that's neither here nor there, really. The fact is that everybody wants the federal government to, you know, bring down a barrel of hell and shove it up this guy's ass because he dared to graze on grasslands that, you know, desert grasslands that the BLA says belong to them and a turtle. That's insane. In the meantime, we got Eric Holder held in contempt by the House, protected by the same son of a bitch from Nevada, Harry Reid. And, you know, he challenges Louis Gohmert, who's a congressman who has every right to get the documents that he needs from the Attorney General to investigate whether this federal agency is doing its job or not. But Eric Holder and Barack Obama and Kathleen Sebelius and all these other pricks are making law. And, of course, Congress allows them to, but they're making law in the executive department, rules and regs. These are unelected people, and the Constitution does not permit them to make law. And then, of course, they decide which laws to enforce and which not. And as you can see, they passed the Patient Protection and Affordable, you know, whatever, which isn't affordable or protection, and then they delayed it illegally some 30, 40 times. You can't make shit up like this. You cannot just arbitrarily do whatever the hell you want. You see, this is what happens when you throw out the rule of law and you have the arbitrary rule of men. And they're going to do all sorts of good things for you, and some people want that. And if you want to wake them up, you have to explain to them, like Rand Paul was saying in that clip, that welfare has its place. When someone is genuinely down and out, disabled, broke, whatever, you don't leave them lying in the street and just let them suffer. But maybe you take care of that personally. Maybe you take care of it through your church. Maybe you take care of it through some voluntary association. Maybe you need your local government to step in. Maybe the state government. Sometimes even the federal government temporarily. But when you start taking people and making them dependent on all this crap, you take away any sense of individual liberty, any sense of community, any sense of responsibility and civic duty and contributing to the culture and contributing to the great American experiment, and you turn them into happy little servile slaves, and some people like that. Now, most people don't. It's just not natural. Don't try to, you know, argue with some kind of lazy Marxist or something like that, but find those people who vote Republican, who say they're conservative, who say they're libertarian, who say they're middle-class, run-of-the-mill average Americans, but end up voting for people like the R guy that from 2012 that Chris mentioned, which I just can't say that word right now. I'll throw up a little bit. I have to say the other one because you don't know what I'm talking about. I'll throw up a little bit too. Jeb Bush, because that's who they want. They want Jeb Bush or Chris Krusty the Clown from New Jersey, or they want you to fire Justin Amash and Louis Gohmert and Trey Gowdy and give us more pricks like Peter King. That's what they want, and that's what you have to work on. That's where you have to wake them up. And the only way that's going to happen is if libertarians and conservatives and Christians and all the people that really love liberty, and we have differences, but if we don't work together to take over this GOP and at the state level, the county level, at the federal level, the federal level is important because that's where all the disasters are coming from now. The state level is important because that's the only way you're going to eventually turn around and check it. But that's not going to happen if we're fighting amongst each other about stupid little crap. Our phone number is 646-649-1013. That's 646-649-1013. We're going to try to take calls in the next 30 minutes or so. And we'll be live on the air till 11 p.m. Eastern, at which time your browser will cut you off and you won't be able to hear anymore unless you're called in on your handset, 646-649-1013. Remember that we broadcast 9 p.m. Eastern every Sunday, bringing you grassroots activism for the conservative cause of liberty. And we'll be off next Sunday, of course, for Easter. But we'll play some replay of something or cut something up for you. And anytime you want to hear any of our shows, just go to blogtalkradio.com, search out Liberty's Thunder. You scroll down the page. Every show is listed there. You just click on the title. It's hyperlinked. It plays right in your browser. And if you go below the scrolling graphics and right-click the download button, you can download an MP3 that you can listen in your MP3-enabled device. You can email it to people. You can take it to burn a CD, take it to your Republican Party meetings, Campaign for Liberty, Tea Party meetings, or what have you. The important thing is that if you, every single day, and this is thankless work, sometimes it's tiring, and you're not going to get a pat on the back for it, but this is the work that you have to do every single day. You got to reach out to somebody who hasn't heard this message before, somebody who might just get politically active a week before the election and then go pull a lever for the elephant, somebody who actually agrees with our principles but maybe doesn't know what to do. What can you do? You can do a lot of things. You can make phone calls. You can give money. You can get the word out. You can go door knocking. The idea is, well, the Republicans suck. Yeah, the Republicans suck. We know the Republicans suck. The Republicans have sucked since 1854. Okay, but that's the only wing of the national duopoly where you got any shot, where you got people like Rand Paul and Ted Cruz and Mike Lee and Justin Amash and Trey Gowdy and Louis Gohmert. So you got to get more of them in there. And the only way you do that is you work for them. Now, if the guy in your state is actually a good guy, of course, I doubt there's too many of them, but let's just say that you like your guy and he's going to win anyway, fine, work somewhere else. Maybe make some phone calls into Michigan to protect Justin Amash, who happens to post and tweet every vote and why on social media so that you can find out what he's thinking, what he's doing. Why not help out Matt Bevin so he can take out Mitch McConnell, who's just the crappiest Republican minority leader that we can have. And if the Republicans do take the Senate, which there's a good possibility they will, he'll be the majority leader. Really, do you want Mitch McConnell screwing you with more power? Come on. And don't give me this, well, he's better than Reid. No, he's not. He's the same thing as Reed. He just happens to wear your jersey, and that's a stupid reason to support him. How about getting rid of Lindsey Graham? I mean, that chick is dangerous. She has to be fired. You know, whatever it is that you can do, do something every single day. Because if we don't start turning this around right now, where our local communities and our states and independence and voluntarism and liberty is reigning again, we're going to be controlled. And those of us that won't comply, well, you know, the hammer of Thor is going to come down on you like it almost did on Bundy, and it might still. That's what's going to happen, because that's what they will do to those who will not go along with the system. But you see, most people are going along with the system because they've forgotten what it's like to stand up. They've been sitting on their asses, stuffing their face with Cheetos and watching reality TV and poking around on the Internet for so long that they have just become soft, silly, easily entertained, mindless, low-thinking morons. And if you don't get them inspired to stand up and be productive again and have a real solid culture where you have self-restraint over yourself and you do the work that you're required to do, whatever job you decide, there are some duties that go along with it. Living in this country and being a citizen has duties along with it. There's no right without duty. You have responsibilities, and you've got to step up and do that work. And if we don't get people involved, we don't get them active, we don't get them interested, you're either going to be in a fusion, in a FEMA camp, or you're going to be a happy little servile slave. Sorry, I went off there. I didn't mean to do that. Chris?
No, man, you're on a roll tonight. I'm just sitting out here on my patio. I've got a good fire going. You know, it's beautiful. I've had two good sunshiny days. It's just great. No, that was awesome.
You don't really have a particular urgency to do anything about it, and that's why it's the Tocqueville called it, and this man called, this is a Frenchman, who came to see how democracy worked in America because he was hoping to teach his countrymen in France back home how they can apply some of these things. Remember something, that every system that's created is created for specific people at a specific time. So the French are different, but he wanted to kind of see more of a raw creation because we are, quote, a new country. We weren't built on old institutions, although that's not really true. We were built on age-old Anglo-Saxon institutions and Western civilization, but we were kind of a new raw country. And he came here in the 1830s when he was writing about democracy, and this is I'm talking about Volume 2. He called it soft despotism, and it's soft because it doesn't have to get in your face like it's doing with Bundy. Because you'll allow it, you know, as long as they let you be happy. You know, they give you your choices of entertainment, and you're fairly well fed, and, you know, you get some modest health care until you're, you know, way late in age and or you know, inconvenient. But for the most part, you know, most people will just get along just fine. It's kind of like that dull existence of an animal in a yoke. And people like that because they're soft and they're weak and they're lazy. And there's always been those people. Those people were here from before the Republic was founded. It doesn't take them to fix the problem. They get swept along with whatever we fix. And so will we lose it forever? Maybe, maybe not. But if we lose it, it'll be several generations that'll have to get it back, and it won't be pretty. So what you have to really do, how do you create a sense of urgency for people? You tell them the truth. You let them know that soft slavery is still slavery. And right off the bat, someone who's not seeing this stuff and it's just their first experience with it, A, isn't going to believe that there is anything really going on in the Republican Party other than these Tea Party and Libertarian infiltrators. Explain to them the situation. Let them know what happened in Tampa. And in case anybody doesn't remember what happened in Tampa, Romney recently admitted to it. They stole the election. They had to steal the election because they didn't have enough delegates, and they had to change the rules. And that kind of behavior is unacceptable because, I mean, if your guy's the legitimate guy, why are you stealing the election? You know, that's the kind of stuff they have to learn. And they have to learn why Rand Paul is not a dangerous isolationist who's going to get us, to die. I mean, look, John Boehner, the alleged Speaker of the House, I guess he is the Speaker of the House, but he doesn't speak much other than when he's got, you know, a drooling whiskey breath and going to the tan booth and giving the Democrats more stuff that they want and maybe getting around to golf with Obama. He got up at the convention
Without objection, the previous question is ordered. The question is on the adoption of the resolution. All those in favor signify by saying aye. All those opposed, no. We need another chair. The ayes have it. The resolution is adopted. Without objection, the motion to reconsider is laid on the table.
Did that sound like there was no objection? Because it sounded like a room full of people objecting, and it only takes one person to make an objection before, you, according to Robert's rules, that you have to address it. They ran through a rule that basically makes it impossible for grassroots to have a say-so in the nominee. And well, Rex, you keep talking to me about 2014. Why are you bringing up 2016? Because 2016 is being defined by 2014, and in 2016, all the down-ballot seats are affected by the top of the ticket. The reason the Republicans don't currently have the Senate is because they didn't get the White House. The reason they didn't get the White House is not because Barack Obama won, but because Mitt Romney lost. There's a difference, because Barack Obama got less votes in 12 than he did in 08. But he still won because Romney lost, because Romney doesn't appeal to people who he says he's representing. See, that's the problem. The conservatives, we smell a lie if we're aware. And the rhinos talk conservative and legislate progressive. The Democrats talk Democrat and legislate progressive, which is exactly the same thing. That's why they get elected. So when they lie to people, people get offended by it. They stop showing up. 114 million people didn't show up. Our job is to get those people. And if we can just increase turnout by 2 or 3%, we can change the mix and change the dynamic. We've seen it before. The 70s sucked. And the rhinos there, I mean, let me remember something. Nixon, he gave you the China deal. He gave you OSHA. He gave you the EPA. All sorts of crazy shit was done under Kissinger and Nixon, just like Bush and Rove and Cheney, right? But 1980 was different. Reagan was there. Was it perfect? Was it great? Was it the conservative moment? No, there were some problems, but he got more done that the establishment hated. 94 was another example. 2010 was another example. We can always do it, but it requires more work and not being let down by the defeats we've had, because every defeat is one moment closer to that victory. Chris, you want to comment on that?
Yeah, I agree. All of it, both of you. Sorry, I'm going through doors. You know, I think that what Joseph was saying was, you know, we'll never get it back. We'll get it back, because there's always been a battle between, freedom and tyrannical governments and dictators and crazy people, Pol Pot and Stalin and everything else like that, and Hitler and all the rest of them. But the challenge is, will you live to see it gotten back, or is it going to be future generations, that finally have enough? And it's going to be bloody, if the totalitarian communist mindset takes over this country. First of all, I don't think it's going to happen. I think that either we will vote in the right people and start to make a shift and adjustment and changes, but if it does happen, there's going to be, still a third of this country has a brain, and they understand basic freedoms and things like that. And the next generation is just struggling like hell, and they have no hope for the future. So there's frustrated people all the way around. So it's hard to say how it will pan out if it hits the worst of the worst. I think the soft despotism strategy, which is really good in that video that you posted, Rex, talking about that concept, that's what you do is, you bribe people, you pay them, you pay people not to work, you pay them to, have a sore toe, you give them shit, and then they roll over and they vote for you. I mean, that's really the true evil. If a guy comes to your country to overthrow it, you know who the enemy is. But when they give you free shit for voting for them, who's the enemy? They give me free stuff. They helped me. They gave me health care. They gave me, when I was down and out, and look at the student loan I got. I never could have got an education without it. So you gradually, generation by generation, buy into this crap. And there are less of us, I think, that really get freedom. you know, that lived it and experienced it and have enough maturity or age on us, you know, to have lived in a different America. But there's a whole bunch of people who think that the government's there for a reason and it's there to help. And it's pretty insane, and it's sad, and it's evil, and all that kind of wonderful stuff, but it's the truth. So where that battle, you know, whether it's a battle of ideas and it's a battle of politics or it goes to hell and turns into a bloody battle, I can't predict that. But something needs to change, and it won't change unless people wake up because, and I actually wrote a short article about this today. It's not politicians that bother me because anybody wants to be a politician already, you know, unless they're just a total I want to save the world kind like Ron Paul, you know, they got a little bit of hustle and crookedness in them, and they're susceptible to the coercion and the wealth creation and those types of things that can be done by not standing on principle. And so I understand, you know, and it's one of the reasons I've always told people, don't give me the Obama news of the day. He's just a puppet, you know, for the same people who controlled Bush. So, you know, I'm just not into that Obama this, Obama that, Obama this, Obama that, because he's not the problem. He is the, you know, the perpetuation, you know, of a deeper problem in our country. That's why he's in power, but he's not really in power. So if you focus on him all the time, you solve nothing and you don't understand the bigger problem that we talk about all the time. And that is, you've got to fix, number one, the heart of Americans and critical thinking and getting people to understand freedom and responsibility. Because here's the key thing, we've talked about this before. You know, we are really good at defining our rights, and the left uses it all the time to push their agenda. But in reality, you know, more than rights, it was responsibility that defined this country. Individual responsibility, you know, self-awareness, self-reliance, you know. And I heard about somebody had I can't remember the state, but they had a little, you know, mini disaster, and FEMA tried to come in there, and they told them, get the hell out. We don't need your help. That, to me, is an American ideal. When you need help, you receive it willingly, but we've just become so dependent on every facet of the federal government, right down to, you know, thinking that a policeman's job is to protect you. Well, it ain't. And the Supreme Court said it isn't. They don't have to put their life on the line for you. And so, you know, we've got this mindset that society and government's there for
jobs,
the good of things. Yeah, jobs, everything else. And it's not. And to control the economy and to manage the economy, are you freaking insane? You know, the Fed hasn't managed anything except debt, you know, and screwing the country. So, you know, it's that whole mindset. It's getting people to wake up to common sense ideas and then having the fortitude to shut off the damn TV, to quit watching faux news, you know, and listening to their bull crap, because they're just as bad as the rest of them, except that they have a few conservatives on there. So you think they care about Christians and conservatives. They don't give a shit about that. Few of them do. But, you know, you get sucked in, and then you start listening to them. That's the mistake. The
well,
key
they have
is that you... Yeah, well, they got a few okay people, like I said. But you've got to pick and choose. You can't just take them at face value. They gave us Romney. You know? I mean, come on.
What?
I was... Yeah.
They tried to take it with Syria. They
yeah.
gave us a new Cold War.
Yeah, yeah, that's what I mean. So, but that's what I'm saying is you've got to choose your sources of information better. And I would say alternative media is about the only place you can go to get the truth. And then you got to watch them too, because people are people. And that's the thing. I don't know why it is that Americans have become such a society of worshiping people who have a platform, whether it's a movie star or a musician or a, you know, a commentator on a news channel. It's a cult. Yeah, it's a cult of personality, and this country is just sold into that. And you know, and it's sad because it's a sickness. And I wish people would, you know, spend more time worrying about what God thinks of them than some frickin' movie star or some, a-hole that doesn't give a crap about you unless you buy their CD. I mean, it's just insanity, but that's how we live in this country today.
Yeah.
So there we are. You know, here you you showed up, and here we are. And this is the point. I think 2014 is so important, and as it pans out, and what happens, and the people we put in power, and the people who don't get removed from power. Now, I'm not talking about Democrats. That's a given. You want to replace them everywhere you can, period, in the report. Most of them are socialists or communists, and that's simple. But I'm talking about the a-holes in the Republican Party.
Yeah, I already
clawed
my
job pretty hard today. And I didn't rant as hard as I did last week coming into the show. I kind of tempered myself. Maybe it's the hole in the concrete work I was doing. But we are at a point where people need to wake up. We are at a point where people needed to wake up a long time ago. And 9/11, regardless of how you think or why you think it happened, it happened. And it's what the government did afterwards that was the criminal thing, because everybody in power said, hey, look what we can do. They're all scared to death. And when you live in fear and you allow government to tell you they will keep you safe, then you have basically given up your rights. This started a long time ago. It started a lot longer before than that, but 9/11 was definitely a turning point in this country. And the fact that people still go through the TSA and haven't demanded change, and the abuses that they put up with, that is the sheepifying of America to the nth degree. And that just, if you want to look at, you know, how our population thinks, you know, it's just like the whole issue with the NSA. Well, if you're not doing anything wrong, who cares if they're spying on you? You should, because why in the hell are they spying on you is the first question. Second question is, why are you such an idiot that you don't think it matters? Because you're sheep. You know, you have no concept. You have no integrity. You have no pride in yourself as a human being, you know, that says, you know, this is my property, my home. You can't walk through my frickin' door without my permission. Period. End of report. I'm in America. This is America. If you don't get that, then you got problems. And there's a lot of people who don't get that. And so, you know, it is definitely a wake-up call, Rex, and I guess we are a little bit of soothsayer, a little bit of fortune tellers, a little bit of reality check, a little bit of reporting on current affairs, but our underlying theme is wake the hell up before it's too late. And I don't know what that too late's going to be. I don't know what it's going to look like. I don't know what is going to happen, but I guarantee you there's some stuff coming. And there's some corrections to be are going to have to be made. You can't run a country like this for as long as we have. And there's corrections coming. How bad they get, I don't know. And the best people in the world that I study and listen to and read, you know, they're hesitant. I think they would have a personal opinion if you talked to them one-on-one around a campfire. You know, in the public, I don't think they want to, you know, shock the shit out of the world about what they think is really coming. But can it be corrected? Sure, if enough people wake up. Otherwise, you think the government's going to give up all this power on its own? Are you crazy? Power, baby, it's the aphrodisiac of the 21st century, you know? So that's my close. Wake the hell up and do something.
And Trog has a big club, so you'd better listen up. And here's the interesting thing, all right? You got to wake up, which means be aware that there is a problem, identify what that problem is, and then figure out what the solution is, and then take action. That's nothing else is going to happen. If you don't know what the problem is, then you don't know what you're fixing. If you don't have a solution, you don't know how to fix the problem. And if you don't take action, then whether you know the problem and you have a solution, it doesn't matter because nothing got done. So work your ass off. That's what you have to do. Work smart, work hard. Get other people involved. We need a force multiplier. But the most important aspect of it is, what are you fighting for? For liberty. You better learn what that is. Liberty isn't freedom to do whatever the F you want to do. Because if we were all doing that, it would be chaos. Liberty is that is you have the right to choose your own path in life without crossing and diminishing other people's paths in life. And that does mean that the rights we have are not absolute, and we do live together, and we got to work it out. Liberty is simple. Living it is messy, and it will lead to conflict. The problem is when that conflict is between paleocons, neocons, Christian cons, voluntarists, ANCAPs, libertarians, what have you, we're losing. We're divided, and the collectivists and the statists and those who want the big nanny state to take care of them by ripping you off will beat us. They're a monolith. They're united on this. We're not. Why? Because we actually think, because conservatism and libertarianism engender diversity and individualism. And the other side of the equation is collectivism. They're a hive mind, and they're coming at us. And we are running around beating each other up. And that this goes for you ANCAPs out there. Your ANCAP fantasy is not going to happen with the Democrats and the rhinos and the progressives in power. Now, let's be clear, it's not going to happen when conservatives and libertarians are in power either. But you got more of a shot. Now, we're going to argue about that. We're going to have fights about that. But right now, we're on the same side of the coin because everything is going to be gone if we don't work together. So I don't care what part of the spectrum you find yourself in or what you like to label yourself. We have to work together to restore a constitutionally restrained federal government and empower the states and the individual people and the local communities and intermediary institutions. This is important because culturally, we might have very different notions of liberty. You know, people up in New Hampshire and New England are going to have one notion. Down south, there's going to be another notion. Out west, with the expansive land that they've got, they got a little bit of a different idea. The whole point is each one of us in our community, in our state, in our locality is supposed to live it the way that we want, the way that we want to order it together without having Washington, D.C. standardize it and cater to the lowest common denominator. When you regulate something to that degree in that much detail, you bring everything down. Nothing gets better. And I mean, like Joseph was saying, 2 1/4 centuries, hey, I think it's pretty amazing we made it this far. I doubt that Alexis de Tocqueville thought we'd make it this far. In fact, I'm going to close by reading from him. And this is from Democracy Too, I believe. He writes, and this is on the idea of soft despotism, which he really didn't have much language to use. And remember, these are translated from the French to English, but he decided to describe it. An innumerable multitude of men alike and equal who turn about without repose in order to procure for themselves petty and vulgar pleasures with which they fill their souls, each of them withdrawn apart, is a virtual stranger, unaware of the fate of the others. His children and his particular friends form for him the entirety of the human race. As for his fellow citizens, he is beside them, but he sees them not. He touches them, and he senses them not. He exists only in himself and for himself alone. And if he still has a family, one could say at least that he no longer has a fatherland. Over these is elevated an immense tutelary power, which takes sole charge of assuring their enjoyment and of watching over their fate. It is absolute, attentive to detail, regular, provident, and gentle. It would resemble the paternal power if, like that power, it had its object to prepare men for manhood. But it seeks to the contrary, to keep them irrevocably fixed in childhood. It loves the fact that the citizens enjoy themselves, provided that they dream solely of their own enjoyment. It works willingly for their happiness, but it wishes to be the only agent and the sole arbiter of that happiness. It provides for their security, foresees and supplies their needs, guides them in the principal affairs, directs their industry, regulates their testaments, divides their inheritances. Can it not relieve them entirely of the trouble of thinking and of the effort associated with living? In this fashion, every day it renders the employment of free will less useful and more rare. It confines the action of the will within a smaller sphere, and bit by bit it steals from each citizen the use of that which is his own. Equality has prepared men for all of these things. It has disposed them to put up with them and often to regard them as a benefit. This is where we're headed. This is our future. Actually, for those of us who resist, it's not our future. We're going to disappear in the middle of the night. But this is the future of America. This is the legacy that we'll be leaving. Generations will look back. Actually, generations from now, they won't look back. They won't even think that far back. They will only be concerned with their immediate moment, and they won't care about what we did. We would have just thrown it away. Generations of liberty will never exist because of what we do. But liberty is a human good. It's a gift that we have that comes with responsibilities and is always in need of defense. You must always guard it and protect it, and not so much for yourself. You have to guard it and protect it for your fellow citizens. Because if you're only concerned about your liberty, they'll take it from you. But if we are each concerned about the other's liberty, then together we'll roll the tide back. And yeah, it seems dark. It seems practically impossible. Ted Cruz and Rand Paul and Mike Lee, they make some nice flowery speeches. They've tried some legislative initiatives, but so far hasn't gone anywhere because Boehner and McConnell and Reid shut them down, and Obama just writes executive orders and his departments just regulate things without passing them as law. So it's really bad. It's horrible, in fact. But you can turn it around right quick. We have the capacity to turn things this way and that way almost at the drop of the hat. Just think of it this way. And for those of you who are not Christians, accept this as just a fable or a story that has lessons you can draw from it. And for those of you who are Christians, it's probably the most important moment of your belief. Today we celebrate Palm Sunday. This is when Jesus came into Jerusalem and was received by her inhabitants as a king, hailed as a hero, Hosanna to the Son of David. By Friday, they released a violent revolutionary instead of Jesus, shouted, "Crucify him," handed him over to the Romans to be tortured and killed in the manner of a slave in the lowest form of punishment the Roman Empire had. In less than a week, between Sunday and Friday, that's what we did. You can turn it around the other way. The thing to remember is, and I'm looking at my calendar right now, today's Palm Sunday, this Friday is Good Friday. The whole defeat of the entire Christ movement, right? Here's your leader, here's your God, he's dead, right? Can you think of anything more dark than creatures murdering their own creator? It was such a shameful act that the sun hid. I think we have some kind of lunar eclipse tonight, so it's kind of interesting. But the sun hid from sight because creatures killed their own creator. Nothing can be darker than that. Yet Easter Sunday is the triumph. And on my calendar, Good Friday always comes before Easter Sunday. And when I wake up in the morning, I've noticed it's always darkest before dawn. This is just part of the rhythm of the reality we live in. And if it's dark now, if we've got a balance sheet that's leveraged 80-1, if forces around the globe are looking to pull away from our fiat scheme and plunge us into darkness, if there are cyber attacks against our systems and an open border because we use all of our resources to either ship illegal guns to Mexican drug cartels or bring the force of hell down on one guy because he's possibly illegally grazing in a field in Nevada, that's pretty dark. It's actually a really shitty situation. You got two choices. Accept it, bow down in defeat right now, never look up again, never grab your dignity, never maintain your liberty. Or stand up and fight and get others to fight with you, to take every action we can take to restore our Constitution, to reform our culture, and to bring sanity and a sense of duty and rights to liberty back to the American shores. We can do that. And maybe we'll win. Maybe we won't. But wouldn't you rather know that you lived your life in dignity, in liberty, or at least fighting for liberty, rather than give up now before you die? Because, you see, that's a kind of a death
to live as a slave for the next 50, 60, 70 years is nothing compared to living free. So we hope you all have a happy Easter. We'll see you two Sundays from today. Don't despair. Look up to the sky. Look up at the stars and stripes. Look back at the history of the men you stand, on whose shoulders you stand, and realize that tomorrow is bright. The sun will shine, and it's a good day to take a knee and then get up and stand proud and fight for the freedom that you've inherited. This is Rex and Trog signing off.
The thunder of liberty rumbles on.